Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand, yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, reimagining pivotal moments.
You know, there are certain figures in history who feel less like historical people and more like, well, like foundational myths. Their shadow is so long, it's hard to imagine the world without them. For me, there's no greater example of that than Socrates.
It's funny you say that. I've always been fascinated by him for the exact opposite reason. He's this monumental figure, the bedrock of Western philosophy. But we have nothing written by him, not a single word. He's a ghost we've all agreed to believe in, pieced together from the stories of others. As a writer, that's just irresistible, the ultimate unreliable narrator, who isn't even narrating.
Right? And for me, it was encountering Plato's dialogues in university. That relentless questioning, the elenchus, it felt like learning a new way for the brain to work. This idea that you arrive at truth not by being told, but by chipping away at everything that isn't true. It's a tool I still think about constantly in my own work and just in life.
And that tool, that way of thinking, was so revolutionary, so disruptive, that the most advanced city-state in the world decided the only way to deal with it was to kill the man who wielded it. That's the real drama here. His death is as much a part of his legacy as his life.
Which brings us to the heart of our episode today. We all know the story of the hemlock. It's the dramatic final act. But what if it wasn't? What happens to the world if its greatest questioner is never silenced? If the gadfly is never swatted?
Exactly. What if the founding martyr of philosophy refuses to be a martyr? How does our understanding of everything, from ethics to logic to the simple act of knowing ourselves, change if Socrates had lived to old age, maybe even growing quiet, instead of becoming an immortal legend in a final defiant act?
That's the timeline we're going to walk today. A world without the trial, without the hemlock. A world with an unseen oracle, whose voice was never turned into a tragic echo.
So, to walk that timeline, I think we have to start with the charge itself. The official accusation was impiety, of not believing in the city's gods, and crucially, of introducing new daimonic things. That inner voice he claimed to hear, his daimonian, that was at the absolute heart of it.
It's so much stranger than just, he's an atheist. It's that he was listening to something else. And the way he described it is fascinating. It wasn't a voice that told him what to do. It never gave him positive advice. It was purely a check, a restraining voice that only ever said, don't.
Right. Which is, what kind of divine guidance is that? It's not an oracle giving you a path forward. It's a divine hand on your shoulder, stopping you from taking a wrong step. It's a veto. And that was seen as so threatening.
Because it replaces the public civic religion with a private, internal one. If everyone has a personal divine veto, who needs the state's rituals or priests? It's a radical act of spiritual individualism.
So, in our timeline, where he isn't silenced, what becomes of that daimonion? Does he spend the next 20 years trying to explain it? Does he try to teach others how to hear their own?
Oh, now that's a thought. Imagine a Socratic school not just of dialectic, but of cultivating that inner voice. Is it a rational source of knowledge? Is it a kind of instinct? Modern scholars debate this, but if Socrates had lived, he would have been the one shaping that debate.
He'd be forced to, because his students, Plato, Xenophon, all of them, would be relentlessly asking him. Okay, Socrates. What is it? Where does it come from? He couldn't just leave it as a mysterious anecdote if he lived to be 90.
And it connects so directly to his broader religious views. The input mentions he saw the gods as inherently wise and just. That was a huge break from the traditional Greek gods who were, well, they were a mess. Jealous, vengeful, petty.
Completely. So his daimonion couldn't be the voice of a god like Zeus or Hera. It had to be the voice of something more, more abstract, more like the good itself.
Which leads you straight into the Euthyphro dilemma, doesn't it? Is something good because the gods will it? Or do the gods will it because it is good?
The central question. And his death turns that question into a monumental inscription on the wall of philosophy. But if he lives, it's just a conversation that continues in the Agora the next day.
And maybe it loses its power. Or, and I think this is more likely, he forces Athens to truly grapple with it for another generation. He doesn't let them off the hook by becoming a martyr. He makes them live with the discomfort of the question. He makes them live with him.
And he keeps pushing. He argues that sacrifice, this transactional religion of I give you a goat, you give me a good harvest, is useless. He says the real worship is philosophy, the pursuit of knowledge.
So, without the trial, he has decades more to essentially dismantle the foundations of civic religion, not with a hammer, but just by asking questions. He's not just a gadfly anymore. He's a slow-acting solvent on the entire religious structure of the city.
I love that phrase, a slow-acting solvent. It's so much more insidious than a gadfly. A gadfly is an annoyance you can swat away. A solvent seeps into the foundations, and you don't even realize the structure is compromised until it's too late.
And the structure isn't just religious, it's political. The two were completely intertwined. How does a fragile post-war democracy like Athens handle a man who relentlessly exposes the ignorance of its most powerful figures, day in and day out, for another 20 years? His execution was, perversely, a definitive statement. It said, you matter.
Right. It reified his importance. But if he lives and just keeps asking questions, does he become a kind of accepted, grumbling feature of the city, like a landmark that everyone complains about? Or does the political pressure just build and build until something else snaps?
I think it has to snap, because you have to consider the next generation he's influencing. Not just Plato, but all the ambitious, sharp young men who see him not as a martyr, but as a living model of dissent.
Does a proper Socratic school form not just a loose affiliation of followers, but a real political or philosophical movement with an elderly, living figurehead?
And what does that do to Plato? I mean, this is the core of it for me. Plato's entire political philosophy is a scream of rage and grief. The Republic is fundamentally a response to one event: the democracy of Athens murdering the wisest and most just man he ever knew.
It's an attempt to design a system where that is impossible, where the philosopher isn't killed, but is made king.
Precisely. So, if Socrates dies peacefully in his bed at age 90, what is the burning injustice that fuels Plato? Is his critique of democracy still so venomous, so absolute? I have a hard time believing it.
So, are you suggesting that without the trial, we might not have the Republic, or at least not the one we know?
I think it would be a completely different book. It might be a calmer, more abstract dialogue about the ideal state, sure. But would it have that urgency, that desperate radical blueprint for a total social reengineering, born out of the trauma of seeing the mob kill his mentor?
Wow. So the foundational text of Western political philosophy is an anomaly? A product of a specific historical trauma rather than an inevitable philosophical development?
I think so. Without the hemlock, Plato's work is probably less rigid, less hierarchical. Maybe it's more Socratic, ironically. More about the questioning, and less about providing this monolithic, authoritarian answer.
So the death of Socrates, in a way, kills the Socratic method in his most famous student and replaces it with Platonism, with a system of answers.
It forces an answer out of him. Yeah, an answer to the pain. You take away the martyrdom, you take away the pain, and the entire trajectory of political thought might shift away from that search for a perfect, unassailable system and stay focused on the messy human process of just asking the next question.
And it's a terrifying thought, isn't it? That the single most influential act in philosophy might have been an anti-philosophical one, a full stop where there should have been a question mark. But it makes me think, it wasn't just Plato in that circle. What about the others, the ones who didn't become saints?
You mean Critias. You mean Alcibiades.
I mean the baggage. Socrates dies a martyr, and his connection to the 30 tyrants becomes a footnote, a charge his defenders can brush away. But if he lives another 20 years, he has to live with them. He has to answer for them, every single day in the agora. He can't be a pure symbol when the man who led a bloody oligarchy was his student.
Oh, that's a heavy point. The trial, in its own dark way, sanitized his legacy. It erased the political complexities. But an elderly Socrates would have been haunted by the ghosts of his own students. He would have been forced to confront the charge of corrupting the youth, not as a legal fiction, but by looking at the very real, very bloody careers of men like Critias.
The questioning would have had to turn inward. He would have had to ask himself, is this what my philosophy produces? It's not just about defining justice in the abstract anymore. It's about accounting for the injustice perpetrated by people who learned at your knee.
And that changes everything. It grounds his entire project in a way his death allowed it to escape. Maybe that's the ultimate what-if for me. We didn't just lose 20 more years of Socratic questioning. We lost the one conversation that mattered most. Socrates questioning himself.
Yeah. Wow. We got the perfect polished statue of a martyr, but we lost the messy, complicated, and maybe far more instructive story of the man who had to live with the consequences of his own ideas.
He became an answer. And the whole point was to be a question. I think that's where the timeline splits. Not just for history, but for the very idea of what it means to be wise. The butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs, where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.